Welcome back. It is The Hard Line. We begin hour number two of today's program. By the way, Commissioner Roger Goodell today was on the Rich Eisen show on NBC Sports Network and asked about if the NFL is considering a truncated season. He said, "We consider public safety in everything that we do when we're making all of our plans. We'll be prepared for all alternatives." And that brings us to introduce a guy you've heard on 590 The Fan many times in the past. He is the director of the sports business program at Washington University, also a contributor to Forbes magazine, and that is Patrick Risch. Patrick, how you doing, man? Haven't talked to you in a while. How you doing?
Hey, Howard. How are you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Well, I know that there's a lot of different ways to go business-wise with the NFL, and all sports leagues for that matter, but with the NFL and what they're doing, obviously going ahead with the draft, they're going to have a virtual offseason. But this whole uncertainty over the season means they really can't plan anything. So one thing I'm curious about, and I just raised this question coming out of the last segment, is I said, suppose they play a season without fans, which obviously affects revenue, and then what happens to the salary cap next year, because usually the salary cap is based on the previous year's revenue. Well, what happens to the salary cap if all of a sudden there's no revenue from tickets? What happens? So I'm curious your take on that. How much has been talked about in your whole sports business, atmosphere? What's been talked about? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't see, Howard, how the salary cap and all the sports that have caps is not affected, because the salary cap is based on a percentage of league-wide revenue, and if league-wide revenue goes down, I don't care if it's football, I don't care if it's hockey, I don't care if it's basketball, it is going to have an impact on what happens next year with the salary cap.
And so NFL-wise, with the whole business, the business aspect of it, and that's one thing obviously the league is always juggling, is the game, is the health of the players, but the business relationships and all those things. And then you wonder, I mean, obviously they have the TV contracts. There's been talk about, I mean, the Players Association, they signed a new CBA and players voted on it only a couple weeks before all this stuff blew up. And so the league was going to then go and start negotiating TV contracts, which I don't know how they can do now based on this, because if they do play, who knows what the ratings are going to be like. I'm just curious your thought, because I was mentioning this earlier, and it's not really a business related question. It's an aesthetics and a kind of a feel type of thing. How fans will react watching games on TV when there's no energy, if there's no fans, if there's no energy in the stadium, it takes away from the atmosphere and all that. What, in your mind, what would that be like?
Well, it's a lot to break down there. Let me back up for a second and try to attack it this way. First of all, make no mistake that if you miss games this year or you play games without fans in stadiums, we want to appreciate the scope of just how large these losses are. Now, I've done some back-of-the-napkin calculations. If you look at the biggest buckets, what are the biggest buckets? You've got ticket revenue, you've got media revenue, you've got other game day spending for food and beverage parking, those sorts of things, and then you have sponsorship revenue. And Howard, if you total those all up on a per-game basis across the entire league, that's roughly about $580 million per game in aggregate across the entire NFL. So I bring that up because, okay, if we play these games but we don't have fans, therefore we can't generate ticket revenue and then the stadium spending, that's about $140 million per week that is lost across the league in those revenues. And in the worst case scenario, let's say we have to go the entire NFL season, we play the games, but we play the games without any fans. That reaches a loss, Howard, and it's crazy to think of this number, of $2.2 billion. So the potential losses here for the league are just, really immense. And as you go forward, I think what's going to be really interesting, Howard, is how will all of sports kind of address this, in particular with venue operations? How are we going to make people feel safer at venues? What sorts of things are going to have to be installed in venues to make people feel safer? And it even, do we open up the buildings even sooner on game days when people can come back to kind of spread the flow of fans in? Howard, when Atlanta Falcons instituted their fan-friendly pricing, one of the side benefits of that was it got people into the building sooner. And so now, by offering cheaper beer and hot dogs when the gates open, that might not only sell more food and beverage, but it also might get people in earlier to kind of spread the flow of fans. So there's nothing is off the table as we look forward to how sports will combat the coronavirus.
Yeah. Wow. It's like there's so many layers to this. And of course, you mentioned the sponsorship dollars and all that. And certainly sponsors love to be involved with the NFL, but where are those sponsors going to be in terms of what their particular business is and how this society is trying to make a comeback, and where will they put their dollars? Will they change some of what they've done in the past? Those all of this is unknown in terms of that aspect. And then, Patrick, I was thinking, I was back to the cap for a second. I mean, we have all these guys signing these contracts that have years, you know, that are under contract beyond, obviously, 2020. And so if all of a sudden you have less revenues and you have all these teams that are over what the cap would, what I mean, that could be chaos. I guess they'd have to come up with some kind of agreement that would, I don't know, would there be kind of a little, not, I don't know. I don't know. What
yeah,
is the?
I don't know either. I mean, it's a great question. And I know Major League Baseball is in the face of this right now because the discussion is, well, if we start the Major League Baseball season and we're giving up 40% of our revenues, meaning the ticket revenue and the game day related spending at the ballparks, then don't players have to take a bigger cut? I think that's the logical thing, Howard. But of course, you and I are not the ones making those multi-million dollar salaries. Yeah. It's these players. And also for the players, you know, many of these guys, even the guys that are just earning minimum salary, well, their careers may only be 3 years long, and then what do they have to, in terms of a career path for themselves? So you can understand why their agents, as well as the players and the players' union, would be very protective. But from a, you know, look, no one's going to feel overly sorry for NFL owners and the league as a whole, because it is one of the wealthiest leagues, if not the wealthiest league in the world. But this puts, and the point we're talking about, really does put a financial hindrance, not only on what we're seeing now, but on the back end of all these contracts that you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild situation. And you talked about all the things that would, the protocols that would have to be put in place if there are games, whether there's fans or not. If there's no fans, you know it's because it's just not overly safe. They have to figure out, is it safe for players? And then do you test players very frequently as they're around each other so often during the week preparing for games and all those things and costs involved in all of that? I mean, there's just so many different levels of this where there's uncertainty and no one knows the answer to.
Yeah, Howard, it's funny. You mentioned the sponsorship revenue. And again, last year's sponsorship revenue that was spent, according to estimates I've seen, is around $1.5 billion, and so, you know, just imagine what it could be for this year if you know, but for the pandemic. And we've had a few people from the corporate partnership world, the agency world, that helps consummate these relationships between corporations and teams. And the feedback that they're giving me is that right now, everybody is more kind of trying to be relational and, you know, hey, how are you doing? Just trying to, you know, soft touch. But at some point, the rubber's going to hit the road, and there's going to be a lot of make goods where if you know, so for instance, in the media's case, well, if this ends up being somewhat of a, you know, if games are canceled, let's say a quarter of the season or a half the season is canceled, then whatever that dollar amount figures to be, $6 billion annually is what the NFL receives in media rights. So let's say a quarter of the season is canceled. Well, then somehow, some way, the networks and the league are going to have to make up that make good of roughly $1.5 billion. Same thing between the media networks and the advertisers. That's a separate bucket altogether, right? Last year, the ad revenue for networks was $4.5 billion during the football season. So if a company has paid out money for those ads for the upcoming season and there's no games or there's fewer games, they're going to have to make, you know, work out some kind of deal going forward to basically give the other party, you know, free assets to make up for the lost assets of this year.
Yeah, and let's remember, too, that whatever the number is for TV revenue or whichever bucket we're putting it in, but TV revenue, players, I think it's 50% plus on the TV revenue goes into the players' pot for the cap. So, okay. Wow.
It's the one thing that I tell my students. We've always talked about how interconnected the sports industry is, and we have nice little graphs and charts that visually show the students how all these different pieces, the players, the teams, the leagues, the sponsors, the fans, all these things are interconnected. And maybe they didn't really appreciate it, but now that all of those things are, you know, the games aren't there, you can see how everything is just disintegrating before our very eyes, and it just shows you that interconnectedness. And then, of course, beyond the interconnectedness within the sports industry, we're seeing all these workers at various venues, the temp workers we know here in St. Louis. We saw an XFL team disintegrate, unfortunately. We saw, or we're seeing, workers at Enterprise Center at Busch Stadium. They're not working right now because there's no games. And, you know, I spoke with someone in the NFL, a team president, who estimated that roughly an NFL team will employ somewhere around 3,000 temp workers per game. So you do the math on that. If they make $14, $15 an hour, they work a six-hour shift, that's the kind of spending that's not going on right now across the entire league for every game that's canceled.
You mentioned the XFL, and I was going to get to that in our brief time left. And we're talking with Patrick Risch, Director of Sports Business Program, the Sports Business Program at Washington University, and a contributor to Forbes magazine. And we know what's happened with the XFL. I just had Kurt Hunziker on before, and he was talking about how even the league owns all the teams, of course, but the St. Louis team had a chance to actually turn a profit this first year. But here we have the situation there. And I had put out a theory that a big reason for why Vince McMahon did what he did, A, was because the WWE is tanking and he couldn't afford to be throwing out more money for a league that isn't going to, at the earliest, would play next February, and he's paying all these salaries. But if the NFL would happen to delay its season, or even college football, then they couldn't even start their season when they wanted to. And so that revenue, I mean, I had heard that Vince McMahon, Patrick, in since the league started, he spent around $130 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Howard. Certainly the loss in shares with WWE, which I think their stock price has gone down about 60% in the last, you know, few months from what I've seen. And this is even before the recent pandemic. That was a big factor because he obviously had amassed this net wealth, and, you know, did he want to take that double hit? And essentially, you know, I think he was willing to ride it out if this season had completed itself, because there was, you know, positivity, not just in St. Louis, but I think overall people felt that the league's, you know, quality of play was decent, that the ratings were decent, that there was actually a chance here. But yeah, the fact that WWE shares have tanked really, I think, was at the end of the day the primary reason that forced his hand.
Yeah, and of course with events and not being able to have it, not having them with fans, and they're doing what they're doing in Florida, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. Last thing for you, Patrick, on the XFL. The XFL is in bankruptcy. It's in Chapter 11. They are hoping to find a buyer by July 15th for the brand and the marketing and the slogan and all those things. What would be the value of that? Do you have any idea? Can you even spitball any kind of number that if, say, someone was interested, what they would be willing to pay for that, knowing that if they would come in and try to restart the league, whether it was next year or 2022, how much money they're going to have to start spending just to operate it? What do you think the likelihood of finding a buyer, and what would be the dollar range of buying something that doesn't really have anything tangible or much tangible?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't know off the top of my head. I would just say that, just kind of theoretically, you want to, first of all, look at what kind of revenues were they likely to generate this year, and then try to project, okay, well, some multiple of that for X number of years into the future, and that would be roughly an estimate of what it would be worth. Let's put it this way. UFC sold for $4 billion, what was it, a year, 2 years ago? There's no way in heck that the XFL would sell for anything close to that. You have to look at what the revenues are, what the revenue projections would be, try to figure out a reasonable time span that the league would potentially exist, and then go from there. But without knowing what those revenues are per team, I'd be reluctant to give a guess. But, you know, it is, at the end of the day, whoever it's going to be, it's going to have to be somebody that has deep pockets, that's willing to lose money. And I think after what's just happened, Howard, granted, this hopefully is a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic that we're living through, but it just goes to show you that if something else were to happen in the future, how financially susceptible this league is.
Yeah, no doubt. We saw with the Alliance where they were relying on other people's money, and that was why essentially that league went away, and everyone felt, well, with this league, we have Vince McMahon. He has the money. He has it. He wants to show that this can work, and so he'll at least, you know, give it a real good shot for two or three years. Who else is out there? I don't know, and that's, you know, that's the big question right now, if there is anyone. I'm kind of skeptical, but I guess you never know, right?
Yeah, it really is a shame, because I thought that they did a beautiful job. And as far as Kurt Hunsaker is concerned, and I've told him this privately and also said it publicly, that he and really anybody with the St. Louis franchise that was involved with the marketing and the selling of tickets for that team, and of course Kurt was the president of the team, I think that once we get past this pandemic and organizations start hiring people again, they're all going to be in a good place, because they really did yeoman's work to basically make it the most productive and profitable team in the league.
No doubt. No question about that. And the one thing we'll never have is, you know, they were talking about that they might have had over 50,000 fans for that game on March 21st that was never played against Los Angeles. That would have been a sight to see, and it's too bad. It's too bad for that, too bad for the whole league, too bad. And I said, Kurt, it was another, I'm not Kurt, you know, Patrick, it was another gut punch to the football fans of St. Louis. How many more gut punches can we take, man? How many more?
I don't know if they can take any more, but I guess the only hope, Howard, is, you know, if the Chargers flame out in Los Angeles, which I think is highly likely, then the question is, what we just recently did in St. Louis, would that be enough to maybe, you know, get the NFL to think about us? But with that lawsuit going on, I don't think the NFL is going to throw too many gifts our way anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Maybe it could be, everyone hopes for maybe a settlement of the lawsuit could result, but
hey, maybe we can be the southernmost team in the Canadian Football League.
Oh, why not? Why not try another league? I guess why not? Hey, we appreciate the time. Best success going forward. I know you've been involved in Washington University for quite a while now, and keep it up. And thanks for joining me today on the Hardline.
Thanks, Howard.
Take care. Patrick Risch, director of the sports business program at Washington University, and a contributor to Forbes magazine. As I mentioned,